Northwest Christian School Online provides online Christian education for any students, ranging from kindergarten to 10th grade. The tuition is fully covered through the state of Arizona's ESA program and is affordable for families out of state. You can count on NCS Online for a rigorous, proven online program that establishes a robust biblical worldview for all students. For more information, go to ncsonline.org. That's ncsonline.org.
People aren't to make images of God because God has already made images of himself, so that we become people in whom God's image is being restored.
Well, gee, we're back again, and yes. We have the very unique privilege of talking to Jenny Delcor, yes. Who is with Christian Family Care. And Jenny, in our last episode, you kind of talked through your responsibilities. You oversee a team of counselors at Christian Family Care. Yes. They're doing a very important work. Do you want to talk a little bit for our parents and the students that are listening? What do your responsibilities entail at Christian Family Care?
Sure. So at Christian Family Care, we provide counseling services and training to families who've been impacted by adoption and foster care. Certainly that's how we started. That's always our focus, the attachment trauma that occurs in foster care and adoption. But we also serve all kinds of families. Any family that wants to come in and get help from us, we're happy to help. We serve children and adults as well individually. We also provide marriage counseling to those who would appreciate that service as well.
Yeah. So, and these are services that are available to, you know, I would say primarily, I don't know if that's the right term of phrase, but mm-hmm. they're available to foster and adoptive families. But these are available to families generally.
Oh, absolutely. Anyone in the community can come in. You don't have to have any kind of affiliation with Christian Family Care. No. You don't have to have any history of adoption or foster care. We provide just general mental health counseling as well with an emphasis on trauma. But that's to anyone in the community.
Wow.
Yeah. I think we could go down a big – I mean, we hit that EMDR a lot mm-hmm. last week, and you mentioned this attachment issue. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the bigger things you deal with adoption? And
yes.
Can you maybe talk about attachment and what that means and looks like? And
absolutely. So attachment is the bonding that happens really before birth. Even before birth, the child is learning to trust and get their needs met from their primary caregiver. So that, of course, starts in utero. And then after the baby is born, that process continues. The child has a need, whether that's hunger or diaper change. Little babies don't have a whole lot of needs. They're pretty simple needs, but they have them. And then the caregiver comes in and provides for the child's needs along with nurture. That's the important part. Those needs have to be met along with nurture. And then the child learns, I can have a need. I can be upset because I have a need. I express my need, you know, through crying. And then my need is met. And through that cycle happening thousands of times in that first year of life, the child learns that the world is essentially a safe, good place. My needs are going to be met. I am going to be loved. I'm worthy of love. And I'm good. I'm good. And I'm safe. I can trust people. And that's going to be the foundation for lifelong positive mental health and positive relationships. However, it's not the way it always happens, unfortunately. Yeah. When you have a child who's experienced attachment trauma, and that can be any kind of trauma or, you know, less than nurturing behavior that affects the child's ability to trust and have all of their needs met, physical and emotional, then we say that attachment trauma has been had. So if that child was placed for adoption at birth, even though they might have been, you know, the child might have been immediately placed into the loving, safe, wonderful arms of their adoptive family, there's been a severing of that relationship with the biological mother, and that's pretty significant attachment trauma. But then moving forward, it can be, you know, when you have children who have had really adverse traumatic experiences and they've had to be, you know, removed from their biological families through, you know, foster care. That's, again, we have the trauma of whatever happened to them, what, you know, if they had neglect or abuse, But also there's this underlying trauma that their needs were not met by their primary caregiver. They learned, I won't get my needs met. I have to meet them myself. I will not be safe. I'm not worthy of love and care. The world is fundamentally an unsafe place to be in. I'm in danger all of the time. And that's just through this attachment trauma. So we work with kids then later who are experiencing the symptoms of attachment trauma. They don't trust. They don't trust their caregivers. They don't trust their teachers. They're not going to follow guidance from their caregivers or teachers or whoever the authorities are in their life because they don't trust them. Fundamentally, they've gotten this idea. And it's not just an idea in their head that they can think through and talk through and you can help them understand that it's not accurate. It's a deep, deep sense. It's the felt sense in their bodies. I will not get my needs met by them. I have to do it myself. So I'm going to do whatever I have to do. And that could be hitting or lying or stealing or cheating or any of these kinds of behaviors that we don't appreciate.
I can only imagine as a child grows that that list is going to get longer and more risky.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. But it is this sense, if I don't meet my own needs in whatever way I have to, I'll die. And so you can see it's a life or death situation for this child, even though we know as the caregivers, we can say, well, it's no, I just told you, you have to brush your teeth. This is not a life or death situation. But to that child's nervous system that is on high alert, constantly saying, danger, 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 it feels like life or death. And every hill is a hill to die on. They just have to do whatever is necessary to survive. So they're just stuck in the survival place due to the attachment trauma.
You know, our church just went through a series called Lies About Love. And one of the things the pastor, one of the lies that he focused on one Sunday was this idea that time heals all wounds. And that isn't necessarily the case. I would have to imagine in a trauma like this, effectively an emotional injury, there is something that time will not heal of its own accord.
Yeah, unfortunately, these traumatic events get frozen into the nervous system. So when that memory is cued, the body thinks it's happening right now. There's no differentiating between past, present, and future with the parts of the brain that are holding onto these memories. They're just frozen in time. And so if something cues this memory opens up. And unfortunately, sometimes these are memories that occurred before the child had the ability to master language. Yeah. So the memories aren't held in words. So they can't tell you, oh, I'm remembering this abuse right now. Instead, their body holds this memory. And their body is saying, we're in danger, we're in danger, we're in danger, we're in danger. So they can't even explain to you what's happening. They're having this physiological response to the trauma. And they just do what they have to do. So this is why you know, time doesn't heal all wounds, because the wound is stuck in this one particular time zone. It doesn't move forward as the child grows.
Yeah, there's so many layers to this. I know you found a survey, Mr. Brown, from the CDC.
Yeah, this is really enlightening. The CDC published what's called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And in the show notes, we'll link to that. It's a data summary and kind of a trends report that's distilled from that publication. But, Jenny, there's a couple of pieces within this that I'd like to read to you and just have you react to these. The first one, I found this really interesting. It said, as we saw in the 10 years prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, mental health among students overall continues to worsen with more than 40% of high school students feeling so sad or hopeless that they could not engage in their regular activities for at least 2 weeks during the previous year, a possible indication of the experience of depressive symptoms. We also saw significant increases in the percentage of youth who seriously considered suicide, made a suicide plan, or attempted suicide. So, you know, it seems as though the statistical precipice in my mind has always been associated with this idea, at least from a timing perspective, with the pandemic. Is that your observation? Are you seeing this decreasing mental stability in young people? Is that strictly the pandemic, or is there a larger cultural force at play?
Yeah, it's a complex issue for sure. I think we saw even before the pandemic, and that survey references the years of 2011 to 2021, so this was definitely pre-pandemic, there has just been the trend for diminishing mental health and increasing anxiety, suicidality, depression, mood disorders, challenges for our teenagers. So I think if the pandemic had never happened, I think we would still be in this same downward trajectory, unfortunately. So I think there are definitely larger cultural and societal factors at play. But I think it's like, I think I mentioned in the last podcast as well, it's like we hit the pandemic and it was like, you know, instead of a slow decline, we just jumped off a cliff. It just became so much worse. Because of those protective factors, we know resilience happens for kids who have lots of family support and natural supports, positive school environment, extracurricular activities, positive friend group. Those are the things, you know, their church activities. These are the things that help protect kids from these greater negative influences. And when the pandemic hit for period of, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks in Arizona, at least, it all ended. It all ended swiftly. It was just one day you had all of these things and the next day you didn't. For some kids, they had a hard time accessing the mental health services that they were already getting. And all of a sudden that was gone. You know, for a lot of them, they were able to continue online as we've done at Christian Family Care with virtual therapy. But for some, they weren't able to do that, especially those who didn't have good internet. There are still many, many families that don't have reliable internet service or devices that are reliable and strong enough to do virtual therapy. Mm-hmm. And so they just lost all of their professional supports. They lost all of their natural supports just in one fell swoop. And then even when those things came back, because that was a window of time, that was roughly 6 to 8 weeks that everything was closed, and then everything started opening back up. School took a little longer for some communities, especially public schools, took a little longer to open up again. But they did. However, what we've been left with is a culture that is more divisive than ever, angrier than ever, and very loud about their anger on the internet.
Yeah.
So kids have been exposed to all of this anger and this divisiveness, and that has not been helpful either.
You know, Jenny, what you're sharing is so instructive, because, you know, I think your observation that the negative trend was in place before the pandemic, exacerbated by COVID. But I wonder, will you go back and talk through, you talked about these supports that families had in place before the pandemic. And I think what's so instructive and applicable here is that these are supports that at this particular point we need to make sure are re-engaged in the lives of students. Can you reiterate for us, just kind of run us down that list again? What are the sorts of supports that are, it doesn't necessarily have to involve therapy, but you know, maybe it's an extracurricular club or church activity, whatever.
Natural supports. Yeah, we call that natural supports. These are supports in the community that are not, you know, paid mental health professionals, right? So, yes, family support, extended family is just absolute magic for kids to have this, you know, extended family support. Community support, so thinking about schools, even for families that homeschool, if they're involved in homeschool co-ops or homeschool groups, that's going to provide that same protective factor as in-person schools do. Extracurricular activities. It's so important for kids to be active. That's something that we've kind of lost in this age of video games. But having kids be active in healthy team sports is really, really important. It helps their physical health, their mental health, and social health. Having kids connected to church or other, you know, faith communities, church activities, youth groups, those kinds of just supports that wrap around a family that provide children with different kinds of outlets. So it's not just, you know, schoolwork, chores, home, you know, so they need to have a variety of experiences and social interactions to be healthy.
That's gold.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
One more quote and then we'll wrap up today. This is kind of a, I don't know, I find this to be very interesting. It says, interestingly, the news is not all bad. The report indicates that over the last 10 years, there's been a decline in what the CDC calls risky sexualized behaviors, as well as a decline in the reported incidents of bullying within schools. And so there's a lot of bad news, but it sounds like there's two areas, at least from the CDC's observation, where there's some encouragement. But I want to drop into your world, Jenny, and ask if that's a statement that you agree with. By your observation, do you see that decline? Do you see the decrease in bullying and risky sexualized behaviors? Or is it as prevalent as ever from your observation?
So it's interesting for my observation. So I have a very small pool of children.
Sure.
And they self-select because they have issues at school. And so they are more likely to experience bullying. They're more likely to experience risky or maladaptive, you know, unhealthy sexual behaviors. So I think my view is probably very, very skewed.
Yeah. Could be.
Yes. In my world, they have all of the people, all the kids that I see have these issues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm probably very skewed in that. I'll believe the statistics. I see them. I trust the source. I think in some ways, even just, and this is where the pandemic was maybe helpful, and this is what I did see in my clients during the pandemic, is so they leaving school, or in-person school, was terrible in many, many ways. However, one of the ways that it wasn't terrible is kids who are experiencing bullying, it just stopped. The bullying ended because they just didn't have access to it. At least the in-school bullying, that was that particular statistic, was talking directly to in-school bullying. I think some online bullying might have taken over some of the in-person bullying, but that statistic was stable. The other thing I think, though, I think that there is more attention and focus and education on bullying. I think that's what's really changed in the last 10 years, is that schools are more aware of it than they've ever been. And when they can be aware of it and they take it seriously, it'll decline.
Interesting.
You put a name on it, you put some solutions, you get people together, start thinking about it. But I think we need to be on that. I like what you kind of quoted or made aware within schools, but I would probably, without any real statistical evidence, but just when I see the outside of schools has exploded.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think kids are smart and they know if they'll get in trouble bullying at school, well, we're just going to take it across the street.
Yeah.
And then schools don't have as much power. Their hands are kind of tied in what happens off campus. So I think there's some of that that's occurring.
Well, and that makes sense because whatever wound within the bully is compelling, you know, hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so when there is that wound within the life of a bully, a pandemic doesn't make that wound go away. It just refocuses it.
Yeah. Yeah, the wound comes out somewhere else. Yeah. It's still there.
So this really wasn't that great of news. but the great news is, of course, you've seen just beauty in some of this. So
can you
obviously can't talk about specifically, but what's some hope we have in this? Because I do want some good news to end on.
Oh, we have so much hope.
Yeah.
We have so much hope. You know, our greatest hope, right, is that we serve a risen Lord.
Amen. Amen.
Right? And so that's what keeps me coming back to darkness every single day, knowing that ultimately the darkness will not win. And what I have seen, though, is I've seen families healed. I've seen kids learn for the first time and really feel for the first time that they're safe, that there is hope. I've seen parents who are able to renew their strength and continue on fighting the good fight every day. It's hard and it's long and it takes years and years and years and years and years. Attachment trauma plays out for a lifetime. But I've seen people grow brave and strong. I've seen people face horrific, scary, awful memories and heal. That's why I do this work.
That's encouraging.
That is.
That's a good.
And by way of encouragement, again, we're ringing the bell right now for the Family Care Learning Library.
Yes.
And so, Jenny, you've put together some of these courses. You've been involved in the creation of some of these. There are some wonderful resources. And folks, just by way of reminder, if you're a Kingdom Culture Conversations listener and you're not part of the Northwest Christian School community, Family Care Learning Library is open to you as well. And I would urge you to take advantage of it. But if you are part of the Northwest Christian community, once you have completed the Parent University Foundations of a Biblical Worldview course, you have immediate and free access to the Family Care Learning Library. And you'll have the opportunity, Jenny, I feel like we could talk all afternoon here.
I know it.
There's so much good stuff that you're bringing to the table. But I do want to, I just want to point folks to that library and take advantage of that. See that hope that Jenny's talking about realized more fully in your home.
Yeah. Thanks so much to the CFC, to you, Jenny, and all you guys are doing to bring that hope to as many people as you can.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. And folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Northwest Christian School has made Biblical Worldview online courses available to all high school students for transcript credit, regardless of whether they attend public school, private school, charter school, or homeschool. Frameworks is an exciting new initiative utilizing the learning management system of Grand Canyon University. For more information, visit BibleClassesForPublicSchools.com.